It's your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
It's me, boys and girls. How are you today? Let's see, we're going to start something We're going to start by making a phone call. That's assuming I hit all the right buttons anyway. We're going to get a hurricane report or a post-hurricane report if we can.
Hello?
Hello, Karen, is that you?
Yes.
Hi, Rick Moore, WNRN Radio, up in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Hello, Rick.
I was calling to get a post-hurricane report. I think everybody in Charlottesville, many of us sort of wiping our brow and thanking the Lord or whomever for not sending the heavy winds and rains. But down on the Hampton Roads area, not so lucky. Can you tell me a little bit about what you found? My understanding is you didn't spend last night at home.
Correct. I did stay in a hotel in Williamsburg.
And why is that?
I know that my house is in a very low-lying area of a low-lying area, and it floods. I get tidal flooding without major storms, so I knew that if I stayed here, I would be stranded in my house, surrounded by floodwater, and I have two children.
So you moved out to the hotel. Your husband is a police officer in this area?
Yes, he's a Pocosin police officer, and he was with all the other police officers. They were mandatory on duty through the storm, so he was not going to be available to help us if we needed help with anything. So
what did you find? Now you've come home, what did you find?
There is quite a bit of standing water still. My backyard is still completely submerged in flood water. There's a very large field across from my house that's also still standing water. All the roads are clear of flood water, but the yard still has standing water. Lots of tree limb debris, no electricity, and the beautiful marsh smell of home.
Are you staying there tonight? No power, you said? Are you staying there tonight?
Yes, I'll stay here tonight. We're hoping that the electricity may be back on best case scenario would be 11 p.m. or so tonight for the electricity to come back on. Or any time between then and 5 a.m. tomorrow morning. So we will stay here tonight.
Now, do you feel thankful about the storm, or are you shaking your head about the mess that you have to clean up?
Very hopeful, very glad that it was not anywhere near as bad as the weather people were predicting at the time in advance of the storm. Was a lot of anxiety. I know that the weather people have to really kind of give you dire predictions so that people will pay attention and secure property and evacuate if necessary, but the pre-storm predictions were extremely dire, so I'm very glad that it turned out to be significantly less than they were predicting.
Now, 8 years ago, Hurricane Isabel came through your area?
Yes. Isabel flooded my house at the time, came inside the house, about 16 or 17 inches of water inside the house.
Now, for people who don't know, that's above the sort of the standard electrical socket in the house.
Correct. Right above it.
And for people who don't understand, that when that water goes away, you couldn't just, like, vacuum it up and go in. You spent almost 4 months in a FEMA trailer in your front yard, correct?
Yes, it was 4 months in a FEMA trailer that was parked in the front yard, and they They hooked the trailer up to the electrical pole, and they hooked the sewer up to the sewer drainage pipe in the front yard, but it's still a travel trailer, so you have to empty the sewage tank multiple times a day. You know, small little oven, really not able to do much at the time. My kids were 8 and 4, and my husband was going through the police academy, so it was quite a stressful 4.5 months.
Well, I'm glad that this was nowhere near as damaging. I hope everyone, I hope you're able to move back in the house sometime soon with the power on and just clean up the garage safely.
Exactly. And right now the kids and I are sitting in the living room with the windows open and playing Parcheesi and waiting for some electricity to come back. And if that's all the, disruption to my life, then I can certainly live with that.
All right, Karen, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Thank you. All right, boys and girls, a little starting the show today with a little post-hurricane update from southeastern Virginia in the Hampton Roads area. And let me thank the backyard for allowing us to do the program today. UVA Corners Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue, welcoming back the students. The backyard has a seasonal menu, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. The backyard is now open on Sundays, serving brunch, and then a pub food menu until close. For more info, you can call them at 434-202-8215. Visit thebackyarduva.com, and they have a Facebook page. All right. For those of you who needed your post-hurricane weather from somewhere other than the Weather Channel, we have done our bit. And now let's introduce our guest for today for the rest of our hour, Dr. Rebecca Tibbett. Rebecca, how are you?
Doing well. How are you, Rick?
I'm well, thank you. Let me give us your, you are a doctor? A doctor of what?
I have my PhD in sociology, and I do demographic research at the University of Virginia's Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service, which is right down the road from this station.
So you had no trouble finding us?
No, it's a nice little trip to make.
We will be talking today about alternative financial services. Give me a definition of an alternative financial service.
Okay, so to some extent, they're called alternative financial services because they are alternatives to the traditional financial services that we think of as banks and credit unions. So most people rely on banks or credit unions to meet all of their financial needs. However, there's a segment of the financial services industry that has developed, and they do not provide checking or savings accounts, but they exist primarily to provide short-term loans, typically at a higher cost, and those are what are deemed alternative financial services. Most people think about payday loans as being probably the service that they're most familiar with, but also auto title lenders, rent-to-own stores, refund anticipation loan providers, where businesses will provide you a refund check in anticipation of your IRS tax refund. Those are all alternative financial services, as are certain groups of subprime mortgage lending and check cashing can be considered alternatives to banks and credit unions.
All right, so this is, we're going to be talking with Dr. Tibbett about a recent report that was done on these alternative financial services. For some people, as we discussed throughout the hour, these are sort of a necessary part of life. And for others, I think the general stereotype is that these businesses are taking advantage of others. And I think as we go throughout the hour, we'll talk about how a little bit of both is true. So Dr. Rebecca Tibbett here today from UVA and the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service. Dr. Tibbett, you were on earlier in the year. Thank you. You've now become a welcome guest at all times. We'll call you up.
Thank you.
For other interesting stories. We talked about sort of the basic concepts of poverty and how the recession has increased the number of Virginia residents who sort of fall into a problem with household income. Because of the recession, household income has gone down or remained the same, while costs have increased. Can you tell me, I know that there's some numbers there about percentage of households that are income inadequate, I believe is the phrase you use.
Yeah, so my analysis showed that about 1 in 4 or 25% of Virginia households don't have enough income to meet their basic expenses, to pay for housing, to pay for childcare if they have children, to put food on their table, to pay for the cost of transportation to get to and from work. And that was a budget that didn't even allow for savings. So we're looking at 25% of Virginia households are barely able to make ends meet based on cost of living in Virginia. And then on top of that, you're having people who are losing their income. So they aren't even going to have the money to pay those bills. And in many cases, they didn't have savings set aside to back that up. And I estimated that nearly 1/3 of Virginia households didn't have a rainy day emergency fund set aside in savings as well.
So 1/4 of Virginians can't pay all their bills on a regular basis. And nearly 1/3 of Virginians don't have anything in the savings for when they lose a job or the car needs a major repair or someone loses their job.
Exactly. Or the kid gets sick or something happens that kind of the one known thing we know is that there will be something that will happen that you can't predict. And it may necessitate hard choices on the cost of a household about, do you go without food for a little bit? Do you delay paying your electricity bill? And of course, all of those decisions have costs associated with them. If you don't pay a bill because you don't have money, you might then have higher fees, utility reinstatement fees. So this is kind of the economic environment in which households sometimes turn to these alternative financial services because they don't have the money to make a necessary payment and they don't have the savings to draw from. And so their only option in that case, because banks and credit unions often don't offer small term loans. This is something that the FDIC at the federal level is working to change because a lot of times, even if these households have a bank account, they might not feel that they can get the services that they need from that bank. And so they turn to a payday lender or an auto title lender to get a small amount of money to make those ends meet. But in the end, they get really high costs because of that.
Well, so we're talking with Dr. Rebecca Tippett from UVA's Weldon Cooper Center, a recent report on these alternative financial services. So if you're coming from a family who, for whatever reason, is having a bill-paying problem, you can't pay this special bill that comes up, and the bank or the credit union that you might not even belong to won't give you the money, doesn't that mean that these payday lenders and auto title lenders, aren't they providing a needed and helpful service?
That is definitely the argument made by the lenders themselves. And it's definitely true that there may be some people who benefit, but there have been studies in other states like North Carolina, for example, who instituted a ban on payday lenders. And they found that while some citizens reported that they missed the payday lenders, the vast majority of people who had previously used them reported being better off financially because they didn't have that. So while I think that we can say in theory the idea of a short-term loan is important, there's a difference between being a business that, I guess, lends and generates a profit from lower and moderate income households versus one that maximizes their profit off of these households. Because if you look at a lot of these products, they're really targeted at the working poor. Most people that are using these have jobs. They have a checking account. They are working hard and just can't pay their bills. And rather than say that these are a necessary evil, I think what we should say, and is happening at both the local, state, and national levels, is that there's need for product innovation from banks and credit unions to meet this. There's room for nonprofits to come in here. If you look at what's going on in certain organizations. Goodwill, for example, has instituted a program that they call Good Choice, which is an alternative to payday lending. And so they provide short-term loans that are small value loans, and they also accompany this with credit counseling.
From Goodwill?
From Goodwill. Goodwill of Greater Richmond area actually has this program going on, and they've managed to help people transition into better financial security by getting them away from payday loans, which tend to be cyclical. It's often people take out a loan, and then they find that they can't repay it, and they have to take out another loan to pay back that first loan. Virginia statewide has instituted some regulations that have tried to reduce that, but you still see that these loans are imposing high costs on consumers.
We are talking with Dr. Rebecca Tippett. I see the phone line ringing now. Phone lines are open, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Here today, as we're talking about alternative financial services, we need a simpler name. We're talking about payday lenders and other similar types of ways to get money in hard-up times for short-term times. Dr. Tippett works at UVA and the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Services, and this is a recent report that was done. Dr. Tippett, I think this phrase high cost has been mentioned a couple times already. What qualifies as high cost? Can you give me some sort of comparison between the fees and rates so I can understand what a high cost is to some sort of other loan that I may take?
Okay, so if you think about, for most of us who may not use payday lenders, probably our source of short-term loans is our credit card. So if you think about a credit card, which many call high cost for them, as being a short-term type of short-term loan, you have APRs or annual percentage rates at the low end around probably 12 to 14%, and at the higher end around 30%. So if we think about the higher end of credit card APRs as high cost lending, what you see on short-term loans is that they have interest rates of, say, 22% or 36% for a month, which in the case of auto title loans, where you receive a loan, and if you default on the loan, the lender gets to repossess your car.
All right. Tell me that one more time.
Okay.
An auto title loan. I go into...
So you go into Loan Max
Loan Max, and I'm just making up places. Loan
yeah.
Max on Seminole,
yeah,
on West Main
Street.
Yeah,
across from the mall, actually.
There is one here in town.
There actually are two on 29 within a few miles. There's a new one. It used to be a barbecue joint on 29, I believe, right across from the mall, and it is now an auto title lender.
All right. So I go in there because I can't... I'm having trouble with my weekly paying all my bills.
Yeah, so say you have an electricity bill you can't make, or you went to the doctor and you can't pay the doctor bill now, and you need some money, and you need it fairly quickly, and you don't need a lot, but you would take your car in, and you have to own the car outright, and you give them the auto title as proof of ownership, and they give you an amount of money. And in Virginia, the rate structure, these are now newly regulated by the Virginia Bureau of Financial Institutions, which is kind of a financial industry regulator in the state. And the first $700 that they lend you have an APR of nearly 300%.
Good Lord, what does that mean?
So that means that for...
I can't do the number in my head, that's so big.
Exactly. So that means they try to break it down and say that, it's a 22% per month APR. So if they lend you $500 on September 1st, that means that at the end of the month, you would owe them a little bit over $600.
Say that one more time.
So if at September 1, they lend you $500.
Okay.
To pay back the loan, you would owe them $600.
So there's 100% interest, whatever the percentage is.
Over the course of a year. But the loan is typically for, say, 14 to 28 days. So typically you're looking at...
But if I can't pay the bill and I have to go get... I mean, I guess I'm just being stupid about it. I'm not trying to ask the simple question for, you know, my friend John, who's not understanding the conversation. If I can't pay the bill in the first place, How in the world am I going to pay them an extra $100 in 2 weeks? I mean, we're not even talking about a month or 6 months from now.
And this is where and this is why these lenders are of such great concern to community leaders, to individuals who work with low and moderate income communities, because they really often can set up what is called kind of cyclical problems. So they aren't set up to help educate people about how to order their finances or how to have this not happen next time, or to try to provide job training so that maybe they can get a better paying job. But they're set up to profit. And if they don't profit, if you can't pay back that bill, in the case of an auto title lender, they will take your car.
In 2 weeks?
I'm not entirely sure exactly. I mean, I think you have
a
little bit of
time. But I would think that you only get so many "you're behind" letters before.
And that's kind of
And that's the only thing I own, probably. If I'm at that state of income versus bills due, that's got to be one of the only things that I probably own. I'm probably still paying a mortgage on my house, or certainly have rent.
You probably don't own a house,
right? I still have rent every month to pay. Good grief.
Exactly. And then the biggest issue, too, is that if you take away transportation, you take away the means to get to work, and people can then often may face the risk of losing their job if they can't get to work. So you're setting up a potentially domino effect of very negative financial events, in part because people are just short. Their income is not going the whole distance, and they are facing either kind of problems now, not being able to feed their kids, not being able to keep the electricity on. And in many ways, it's not that they're making a bad decision, it's that they don't have other decisions to make, really.
11:23 on the wake-up call. Call in with your question. I realize that I just asked a couple really stupid and basic questions, but I've never had to deal with this, and so I'm being educated across the board right here from Dr. Tippett. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN rocks. Let me give you the markets of Tiger Fuel weather forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny and windy today. Highs in the mid 80s. A little cooler in the valley at upper 70s. Partly cloudy tonight. Lows 55 to 60. Mostly sunny tomorrow with a slight chance of afternoon thunderstorms. Highs 80 to 85. Right now it's pretty nice and sunny out there. 74 in the valley, 80 in Lynchburg, 84 in Richmond, 81 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let me thank Dixon Disposal for their support today. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. And when Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. Dial them up for more information, 978-2111, online, DixonDisposal.com. And let me tell you today, support also coming from UVA Intramural Recreational Sports, bringing fitness and recreation for the whole family. Adult programs include swimming and tennis and group exercise. Outdoor Rec features rock climbing, kayaking, and fly fishing. Youth programs, swimming, tennis, Kid Fit, and martial arts classes. Students and members are eligible for competitive sports league and tournament play. Member registration is open now. Open registration begins on August 30th. There are three ways to register. Online, it's virginia.edu/IMS. You can go in person at the Intramural Sports Business Office in the UVA Aquatic and Fitness Center, or call 434-924-3791. All right, back to Dr. Tippett. As we talk about alternative financial services, you can call 979-0919. Also, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is toll-free, or send us an instant message, WNRN Studio, on the AOL site. And here's an instant message question, Dr. Tippett. Is there a minimum wage that reduces this problem?
If there is one, and there are kind of minimum self-sufficiency wages. There's no across-the-board minimum wage, because what you have to think about when you're thinking about setting minimums is that this varies from location to location based on cost of living. We know that it costs about three times as much to live in Northern Virginia than it does to live in, say, Southwest Virginia. Similarly, high costs are seen in Hampton Roads and the Richmond region. So this also kind of points to the need for local initiatives. For example, the Charlottesville minimum wage initiative definitely, I think, was undertaken in large part to address the higher cost of living in the Charlottesville city and Albemarle area versus some of the outlying counties. So I do think that raising wages to the extent that they allow people to take in enough to support themselves is very important. But we're also looking down the barrel of a lot of people not even having a job. So a minimum wage is only helpful if you have a job. And unfortunately, I don't know that anyone has quite figured out how to get back to high levels of employment yet.
And even if you have a job, like you said, it doesn't mean that you have enough money to go with it. Dr. Tippett, talking about alternative financial services here. She's from the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service, a UVA group. Dr. Tippett, we touched briefly on the demographics, but tell me a little more detail about the demographics for those who are using, whether they're using them in the best way, or those who might be being hurt and taken advantage of with the alternative financial services.
Okay, so what we see is that, first and foremost, in general, people using payday loans, auto title lenders, et cetera, tend to be younger than people who don't. And that's in part because younger people tend to have more expenses with less income. And as you get older, hopefully you're earning more income than you did when you were younger. Your kids aren't as young. So that's kind of a basic demographic characteristic. We also see really significant differences in racial and ethnic groups. So we do see that across the board in general, African-American households are significantly more likely to use alternative financial services like payday lenders or rent-to-own stores. But that is also – that's a really tricky one where – that is in part reflective of the fact that these lenders are distributed differentially across geography. So many neighborhoods only have payday lenders and rent-to-own stores.
All right, do that one more time. So, they're distributed.
Basically, not every community has the same financial lenders available to
it. Okay, so Charlottesville has, you said, two of them. Up on 29, or two auto title loans stores up on 29. So from here, WNRN, sort of down near the university, and I can get on at the university tennis courts and turn left and go up 29 all the way to the bridge, and I'm going to pass two auto title lenders.
So right across from Barracks, I believe there's a payday lender and an auto title lender, and then if you keep on going north to the mall, there's a new auto title lender.
All right, so we'll say that if you count them all together, there might be somewhere between three to six. If you throw in all the payday lenders, et cetera?
Yeah, I don't have the details for Charlottesville, but...
But that's got to be 4 or 5 miles.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yeah.
So what you're saying is that in a lower socioeconomic status neighborhood, regardless of race, is it just income?
No, it's not just income and it's not just education. So you do see that lower income individuals, individuals with less than a high school diploma or just a high school diploma and GED are more likely to use alternative financial services. But when you look at community characteristics associated with the location of alternative financial services, like payday lenders, you see that even after you take into account the proportion of the population that has a poverty income or the proportion of the population that has less than a high school diploma or conversely more than a bachelor's degree or higher, you still see that across the board, these lenders are more likely to locate in Black communities in Virginia. And whether that reflects special targeting or whether that reflects the differential use across race, that's beyond kind of my ability to discern from my study. But what it does highlight is that you have communities in which there are no banks, there are no credit unions, but there are auto title lenders, there are rent-to-own stores, there are refund anticipation loans, there are payday lenders, there are pawn shops. And in those communities, you're looking at households that they don't have financial options. They have alternative financial services or alternative financial services.
All right, 11:31 here in the wake-up call with Dr. Rebecca Tippett. We're talking about alternative financial services. That's ways to get money in a time of need other than a bank. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Call up with your question. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for letting us be on air today. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Mead Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. All right, Dr. Tippett, we were talking about a wide string of things there. Why is a pawn shop thrown into this? I mean, pawn shops have been around for a decade, but I would assume that payday lenders, at least, maybe they have too, just in alternative forms. But why is a pawn shop thrown in this, right? I need some cash, so I take my grandmother's, piece of jewelry.
The brooch.
Right, yeah, the brooch in that that's my decision to do that, and I'm either going to take the money or I'm going to get it back later. Why are they in the same garbage can here?
To some extent, they provide an alternative financial service. So they're here because of that. And that also highlights that maybe this isn't, you can't paint everything necessarily with the same brushstroke. In many ways, pawn shops serve those people who may be most kind of disenfranchised. They probably don't have a bank account, or they may not have a bank account, although we do see that as times get tough, you see the usage of stores like pawn shops increase across all groups. It's no longer just poor to the poor, but pawn shops are an interesting thing in that you can take in something that you have and you can get money for it. And if you get enough money, you can buy it back. If not, the pawn lender keeps it and sells it for a profit. In many ways, those don't cause as much potential devastation to a household as a payday loan does, which kind of gets people in a cycle of lending, or an auto title loan in which they forfeit their car. But at the same time, I think that there's a difference between, oh, my grandmother died and I have some of her goods to sell and I'm going to get some money from them, I'll take them to the pawn shop, versus being so strapped for cash that your only alternative is to take something that maybe has value to you, but you're making hard choices about what's going on, and that maybe you don't have credit, you don't have access to somebody who will give you a loan, who will help you through this process. And in that case, I think that's how we can see pawn shops serving as alternative providers.
So I want to get back to the payday lenders for a second. Just want to make sure that I understand it properly. I think I have the concept of it. I don't think it's that hard, but I'd like to get the numbers. I have my paycheck for the week of $250.
Okay.
And I know that I'm going to take it there, because what I'm doing is I'm saying, look, can you give me my $250 before I actually get the check? Correct? That's how it works?
Correct. So I believe, and I haven't actually used payday products myself, but what I understand to be is that you take a post. So basically, they came into existence because financial regulations changed and they began being allowed to take kind of pre-written checks. So I write, you say, okay, I'm going to get $250 in a week, and here's my paycheck stub, here is proof of my income, and then you write them a check that is written for kind of your payday, for when that will be deposited into your account. So you write them the value of your payday check plus associated fees. So in Virginia, while there is technically a rate cap on payday loans in Virginia of 36% APR annually, lenders are also allowed to charge up to 20% for every $100 loaned, as well as a $5 registration fee. So for your $250, which you would have due, and if you say that you get paid weekly, and so your $250 would be due in 2 weeks. So you'd write them a check for 2 weeks from today for $250 plus $5, so that's $255, plus 20% of $250, which is...
That's another $50.
Another $50 plus interest of...
I'm already down $55.
So yeah, you're...
So in 2 weeks, I have to have at least $55 more on the same paycheck that I'm going to get.
Correct.
So I need to do some babysitting or something.
Yeah, cut some hair. No, really, you're definitely... This is why people call these products predatory.
But one of the things that I read in your paper, again, it's Dr. Rebecca Tippett from the Weldon Cooper Center at UVA. One of the things that I read is that... Virginia has what I think you quoted, loose regulations.
Yeah, so we do have some regulations on these lenders, but we allow all types of lenders in the state compared to neighboring states like North Carolina, which have actually outlawed payday lenders, and Ohio has outlawed payday lenders. We are one of, I believe, 22 states that allows all forms of alternative financial services.
And why would they outlaw payday lenders? I mean, again, I understand the part about that's an incredible amount of fee and how it would get me into some sort of cyclical problem where, gosh, I just need to catch up with my $55 to repay what I owe last time. So whether I work a little extra here or I go to somebody else and borrow it, you know, or I understand that part. But there, it has to, whether it's acceptable or just understood that there's going to be a percentage of people who need to use these. I mean, that's the way that our culture works, is that there are people at the bottom of the pile, and with capitalism, people aren't going to always make as much as they need or make as much as they think they need. I mean, I don't want to sound like I won't mention any names, but some staunch Republicans who say, television? What do they need a television for? Well, if they didn't buy a television, if they didn't pay for cable, they'd have an extra, you know, $50 to apply for food, you know, or things like that. But isn't there always going to be a percentage of people who don't have enough money? And so therefore, what do they do in North Carolina or Ohio?
So therefore, we should encourage them to products that rip them off further. I'm not entirely sure that that is the solution. And I believe that that was the concern of organizations in North Carolina and Ohio. And yeah, well, your point about, some people, you know, a small percentage of people will spend their money frivolously across all income strata. However, what we do know from the research that I talked about with you in April is that nearly a quarter of Virginia households don't make enough money to meet basic budgets. That's not allowing for cable. That's not allowing for savings. That's not allowing for emergencies. So that's no longer a small proportion of your strata. You're looking at, you know, a quarter of Virginians, possibly more now that we're looking at really long economic recession and potentially another recession coming. So I think the concern there is that you have products that cost a lot of money for people to basically get by, and they're trapping people in a vicious cycle of kind of high costs and loans, and that while they may be helpful for a small proportion of people, overall they cause more damage to those individuals and their families, and subsequently damage the communities in which they live, because economically weak families impose costs. They have to rely on social services more. They might not be able to pay their rent or their mortgage, in which case you don't want your neighbor to, you know, have their home foreclosed upon, because that negatively impacts your home properties. As a business owner, you want people to be able to pay their bills because you want your bills to get paid. So you have all these things where I think it becomes no longer about, is it this one person or these small number of people who maybe can't make ends meet and are returning to these services and sometimes benefiting from them, but these are impacting negatively whole communities of people. And I think that that's where the ban comes in. And I understand for some people that some people argue that that's very paternalistic. And I'm not entirely sure that banning is the correct way to go about it, because as you correctly point out, banning the services does not negate the need for something. And it may be that we have to think locally about good ways to develop programs that fill this need without setting up families for long-term failure.
11:41 on the wake-up call. Dr. Rebecca Tippett here as we talk about alternative financial services, the helpful and predatory parts that go with a payday lender and other similar businesses. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, WNRN Studio on the instant message board.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
In this week's issue, what is making kids so fat? One local mother says city schools aren't doing enough to make healthy eating a top priority. Albemarle County Supervisor Rodney Thomas created controversy with passage of the Western Bypass, but says accusations that he's a Wheeler dealer are out of line. And a recent concert proved fertile ground for ticket scalpers. What's the problem with scalpers anyway? And The Hook, two-time winner of the state's top journalism prize. And let me thank L. Oppelman's. They are Central Virginia's complete music headquarters, continuously operated since 1890 at 909 Main Street in downtown Lynchburg. L. Oppelman's music department is now featuring acoustic guitars, banjos, mandolins, and violins. Also available, complete drum sets. L. Oppelman, that's 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. Online, it's loppelman.com. And not that you would, but don't go anywhere, because Drew Thompson will be here at noon for Les Temps Perdue. That's the best of 80s and 90s alternative with groups like Aztec Camera, Urge Overkill, and Concrete Blonde. Brought to you in part by Caliente. Requests always welcome to Drew on Les Temps Perdue. All right, back with Dr. Tippett. We were talking, you mentioned earlier about people who don't have banks. We were talking about the percentage of alternative financial services in some, African-American communities. But I was struck to find that there are neighborhoods, it's not because that the choice might be for a payday lender or auto title lender or something like that, but it's because in large numbers or large size neighborhoods, there isn't a bank to go to. And if you want your money, that's what you do.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the lack of access both to kind of physical structures as well as potentially the lack of trust of institutions, because you also have a large number of people who don't use banks primarily because of negative experiences with banks. You know, you have the notorious, I guess, $35 cup of coffee for people who are low or moderate income, and they maybe just because of, you know, being tight on money, they pay for something with their check card, and lo and behold, accidentally overdraft, and that's, you know, a $35 fee often for like a $2 purchase. So you have kind of different opinions of banks, and you have different services offered by banks. But when you look at it, what I found was that nearly one in five Black Virginians live in a census tract, which is a smaller geography. It's smaller than a county, but it's about the size of a neighborhood, with only alternative financial service institutions. In contrast, only a little bit more than one in 10 white Virginians do. So you have communities where, like you were saying, the only service provider is a payday lender or an auto title lender, and there are no banks or credit unions.
11:45 with Dr. Tibbett. We've been talking about payday lenders, but there's also a group, a size that was I found to be very large, and I can't remember the name of it now, refund anticipation.
Yes. So that is a very interesting product, and I find it really interesting that they are so large, given that refund anticipation loans can occur only one time per year. They occur at tax time. So these are tax providers, actually like H&R Block, that offer refund anticipation products. So what they do is they prepare your tax return generally for a fee, and they will say, you know, offer a refund anticipation product that says, you know, you're going to have to wait 1 week or 2 weeks to get your money, but we can give it to you right now for a fee. And those fees vary from lender to lender. But what I think is of significant concern for all of us is that a lot of households that are using refund anticipation loans are households that receive what's called the Earned Income Tax Credit, which is a federal program. It's a tax credit aimed at supporting the working poor, and it's an anti-poverty program. And so you're looking at products that eat into a program specifically targeted for poverty prevention among low-income working households. And there are many, so this has become a significant concern for the IRS and the federal government. And actually, there have been multiple initiatives taken in the last year or two that are trying to prevent and curtail the use of refund anticipation loans, because not only does that take money directly out of that household's pocket, but I think it's a concern for all of us who pay taxes and who, you know, that's our those are our tax dollars that are going in the pockets of a refund anticipation loan provider.
I don't understand. I mean, I guess I do that if you're due, I don't know, $500 and you need it, you would rather get it today as opposed to 2 weeks from now. What's the fee on that? I mean, how much are these? And granted, they're families that are in similar situations as with the paycheck setup where you're, gosh, it sure would be nice to have that now so I can pay my bills today rather than having to wait 2 weeks. But what kind of fee are we talking about with that?
I actually, those types of fees are not made public, and they vary from provider to provider. So I don't have a good sense. Those aren't regulated by the state. They aren't regulated.
Oh, they're not?
No.
So you can call around and say, what would you charge me? And it might be 5%, and you might be, what would you charge me? And it could be 20%?
I believe so. They aren't regulated. There's no list of providers, which has made it kind of difficult to target. But what you do see, you know, well, it sounds like, Rick, like you're fairly financially secure, so it's very difficult.
Not for long. I'm looking for a job, by the way, listeners, if anybody's out there.
You know, 2 weeks, waiting 2 weeks for money seems, oh, why can't you just wait 2 weeks? But for some households, they actually can't wait 2 weeks. There may be bills that are past due that the only way that they can even begin to think about paying it is through their IRS refund. So they know that they have money coming. They know that they could get more of it if they waited 2 weeks, but they might not have that option. So what you've seen is that the Treasury Department this past spring introduced a pilot program where they directly deposited refunds onto debit cards in the hopes that that might help. And actually last year, the IRS changed the way it reported taxes to make it more difficult for people to provide refund anticipation loans. So they changed their underwriting guidelines. Whether or not that affected the volume and the number of refund anticipation loans conducted this year remains to be seen, and I don't know that we'll really know the effect of those until maybe next spring.
But if as a family, I need my money as soon as possible, mm-hmm. and now the federal government is saying, sorry, but we're writing some laws here that say you might have to wait that 2 weeks anyway. Is that what I just
No,
heard
actually,
you say?
They're introducing programs that make it faster and more efficient for households to get their money. So they're introducing a quick deposit onto a prepaid debit card so households can have that money nearly instantaneously. Also, if you think about the push towards electronic filing an electronic refund, if you have a household with a bank account, they can get that directly deposited quite quickly and in significantly less time than 2 weeks.
11:50 on the wake-up calls. We talk with Dr. Rebecca Tippett from the Walden Cooper Center here at UVA about alternative financial services. Those are groups and businesses other than a traditional bank who provide short-term loans at often what are very high interest rates. And the discussion is whether are they helpful or predatory? When might they, for the group of people who use them on a regular basis, and get them in some sort of evil cycle? Dr. Tippett, somewhere in that report I read the term unbanked.
Uh-huh.
And then we talked about people who in certain, I can't remember the word you used, but it was neighborhoods of some type.
Yeah, in neighborhoods.
Who don't have a bank in there. Are there, what about laws that would require some sort of financial institution to be in a neighborhood? If you're going to be this big, if you're going to be Wells Fargo and buy all of the East Coast Wachovias, is there something in there, or has there been any discussion about, fine, but you have to have a bank every X number of people or whatever phrase it is that you use for census reports?
I mean, I don't know that that would really do anything, because you also have the fact that institutions, buildings require clientele. So you have about 25% of Virginians live in a census tract or a neighborhood that has nothing. They don't have a bank. They don't have a payday lender. These tend to be rural tracts where population is sparse, and you don't have sufficient numbers of people that would support putting a building there. So I do think that we have to think about kind of the practicality issue there. But, you know, you mentioned the unbanked. So there are households that don't have bank accounts at all. So they don't have a checking account. They don't have a savings account. They might have, you know, the cookie jar filled with money as their savings account, or money stuffed under the mattress. And in general, while these households do use alternative financial services like payday lenders or auto title lenders, actually, those households can't use payday lenders because you have to have a checking account to use a payday lender. So they might rely on pawn shops or other things. In general, most people who are unbanked don't use alternative financial services, and most people who use alternative financial services have a bank account. So it's kind of, you know, banking is not necessarily the solution here.
Here's a question that came through the instant message board, which is, you mentioned that some states have tighter regulations. What can Virginia do to fall into that category?
I mean, that's really what we as citizens, or, you know, the question writer, that I think is a ground up initiative. These organizations do have a lot of money invested in lobbying to stay open. And there are, I believe, both local and statewide initiatives to try to get rid of payday lenders. I know that there's a community, a lot of counties have signed a petition, I guess, to kind of eradicate payday. But the one thing that's received a lot of attention in terms of banning across other states is auto title loans. Auto title loans are illegal in more than half the states, and they're not allowed. And what Virginia has done, actually, is they have at least imposed restrictions. You're no longer allowed to make loans to military members. So it used to be that if you look, a lot of these lenders are clustered in Hampton Roads. And actually, I became most interested because I was driving through Fredericksburg. And if you drive through that area, because I was visiting my husband, who's in the Marine Corps, and he was up at Quantico. And as I was driving back, I noticed just line after line of stores that were check cashers or payday lenders or auto title lenders. And you'll notice that when you drive through certain communities, and often they are near military communities, you see high numbers of these. And at the national level, Congress made it illegal to do payday loans to military.
11:55 here on the Wake Up Call. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. A few minutes left with Dr. Tippett. And let me thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for letting us be on air today. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports encourages you to be kind and have fun and always do the right thing. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in Charlottesville at Barracks Road. They have three locations in Richmond. Online, it's BRMS for more store information. Dr. Tibbett, we're talking about ways to, you know, or that last message or question, wanted to know about ways for Virginia to do things to meet the tighter regulations that other states might have, and you brought up auto title loans. What does the state, what benefit does the state have by allowing this type of business to exist? I mean, okay, so you get your business fees, but is the state making enough profit to allow what many people would call a business that hurts more people than it helps?
I don't know the particulars on that, but I do know that most of these businesses are not Virginia-run businesses. A lot of them are out-of-state businesses, and while they may provide a small number of jobs to the people that work there, they're disproportionately impacting a much larger number of people. And I will say that I've noticed in the last year an increasing number of these businesses. I've noticed more actual advertisements on the radio for auto title loans, for CarMax, actually, and I've seen, like I said, the auto title lender pop up across from the mall in Charlottesville. So this is just, Charlottesville is just one community in a fairly, you know, in a fairly affluent region that is seeing changes. And given the fact that you're looking at long-term unemployment for a lot of households, for, you know, increasing food costs, you may have a growing number of people who are turning to these services, in which case, I think if this is a concern, and it definitely is a concern to me, and if listeners find this a concern for them, there, I'd encourage, you know, contacting your representative and looking up some of the agencies that are both trying to get rid of these services, but at the same time, think about ways to build alternatives, because, like I said, these are here because they're meeting a need, and it's not enough to get rid of this, but it's important to think about other ways that this need can be met.
That's that old phrase, it's not a problem unless you have an answer. So if you think that it's a problem, then what is your alternative? And you talked about the Goodwill in Richmond.
Mm-hmm. And there is also a local initiative that has been working to think about ways to build alternatives to an alternative banking product. So something that's accessible to low and moderate income households that provides products that meet their needs. I don't know how I've only been in kind of conversation with some of the people, but I know that there's definitely people here who are interested in that. There are, like I said, organization Goodwill has the Good Choice program, and there are other community organizations. I know, like Virginia Community Capital, which is a statewide program, is looking at ways to, you know, build financial literacy and economic security, and those are all people who are partners in trying to find alternatives to alternative financial services.
All right, Dr. Tibbett, thank you so much for being here today. Sean will have the program podcast and up on cvillepodcast.com, which should have a link to find the report from the Weldon Cooper Center. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
Next week, Dr. Michael Feetz from Georgetown Vet will be here. So if you have a question about your dog or cat or other unusual household pet, write it down, get ready, and we'll talk to you next Sunday.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.